This is Jordan Grace, and you're listening to the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
BWB. This is One Nation Radio. You better get it right. Rich Latta, James Boyd came to give them life. The Blackest Wrestling Podcast has come to kick all ass and drop it 6 feet if they're kicking trash. Word. Let me welcome y'all to something different. And if you dig it, man, you should let some friends listen. We be getting it in this on the regular, dude. Ravishing flow, but this shit rule. See, James don't rap, so I had to break it down. The whole network, man, we coming for the crown. Raps in the columns, I keep them both covered. Making the beats too, so the listeners can bump it. Hit us with the rating, yeah, I'm saying it's a 5. Before you hit a tug, bob your head side to side. It's One Nation Radio, and this is the beginning. It's Rich, and I'm here with James. It's time to listen to One Nation.
We got to unleash the power of the pyramid.
This is Mike Sempervivi from WrestlingObserver.com. Check me out on Wrestling Observer Live every day. And also check out your boys, Rich and James, on One Nation Radio.
Hi, this is Kenny Omega. We're listening to One Nation Radio. Check it out, guys. These guys know what's up. Big Kenny Omega fans, that's all it counts to me. Goodbye and good night. Bang.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of One Nation Radio. I'm James Boyd, and here with me, I have the return of the LeBron James of Social Suplex, one Richard Derek Latta. What's going on, sir?
Not much, man. Just shout out to my boy Dre Zero for that wonderful new nickname, you know, which was hilarious. So I requested to be introduced as such. But yeah, your boy's back. Married man.
Yeah. Married man.
You know, chilling. Shouts out to everybody that reached out, congratulating me on the big day. And thank you to James for everything he was, you know, contributing to it. And shouts out to his brother Daniel. And you know, had a nice week away and got to see some wrestling, a little behind. But the Lakers won the NBA championship in the time that I was gone, you know. Laker excellence back in full effect. Everybody thought it was dead. No. I sat on this podcast for many years while James was asking me facetiously how many games the Lakers would win, thinking it was a game. And now that we have this belt, you know, I'd ask any Boston Celtics fans, you know, to hold my dick. You know, because we've got 17 now. And you know, where we belong, back on top. You know, the real the arc is always going to bend back towards the Lakers. Some of y'all know, some of y'all need to get to know. And, you know, that's just what it is.
See.
You know, Kobe, number 6.
Do we know, I think this someone will find out down the line. I'm interested to see, like, what they do as a public gesture, you know, whenever the season starts, whenever they get fans back, like what that is with, you know, the Bryant family coming back to Staples or whatever else at Process Championship. I wonder how I'm interested to see it just because, like, it's going to be such a feel good moment. So, yeah, shout out to the Lakers. I ended up doing I don't know if you listen to the show or not, but because
I heard it.
I didn't even want to listen to the show. You know how many times I had to punch that fucking thing in? Oh my God. I don't know how you did this show for months on end without me back in the 2018?
I had a lot to say, and then it was, man, like I would record like 7 minutes at a time and just, like, you know, figure it out.
I just had the format, and I was just talking. It was like, okay, I'm just going to get out my opinions and throw it out there. I don't know. I got no feedback from anybody. That's how bad the Chess Show had to have been. So it is what it is. But yeah. So
we're a little pressed for time today, so we're going to try to blow through this stuff. But
we're not. Are we going to save the thing for next week?
About the
toxicity?
Yeah, we're going to have to. We're going to have to.
We're going to do that.
I'll give you one. Apparently.
No, save it. Save it all. Because it's going to have to be clipped for, you know, on our, you know, best moments of 2020. So save it. Whatever you got, save it. It's coming.
I'm going to have to go deep in the memory banks because it's been a long time.
day talking to Kendrick, it made me think of like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of these. It was a bunch of these. But anyway, we're here today on the day of the final of the G1 Climax 30 show. I did not watch the whole show. I only watched the finals. To be honest with y'all, full disclosure, I stopped watching the tournament when we got to night 5. And then from that moment, from Wednesday until today, I have completed the entirety of that tournament. I watched from night 6, wow. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and then watched the final today. I am fucking exhausted. I don't know how I even have the energy to watch wrestling for I don't know how long, but I'll probably be back next week. The A Block, incredible tournament. The A Block is everything you expect out of the G1. The B Block should be the B Block. Tanahashi came through for me every single night. Yoshihashi in the opener almost every night came through with some for me. Goto had his moments. Sonata had his moments, especially late in the tournament. Naito had his moments as well.
That's nice for the champion to have his moments.
Right, the double champion, right? I understand we give him hell, but we know how he gets down when it comes to the G1 the last few years, especially since his body, has kind of gone on him. Like, he can give you, moments of excellence, but it's just moments. Like, he can't be consistently great. Similar to last year where he just basically backloaded all his excellent performances. He had moments, like the opener with Tanahashi, the match with Sabre I really enjoyed. The match with Goto I enjoyed. The match with Sonata, I think that's not Sonata's best match of the tournament, but I enjoyed it. And I'm just going to move on to talking about more Naito matchups. Ones that need to be thrown into the fucking bin and never used again. I never want to see Naito and Evil Russell ever fucking again. It was the third match I'm doing the same shit they have done all summer long. It fucking sucked then. It fucking sucked a little after that in the baseball stadium, and it fucking sucked here.
Well, good news, James. Apparently, they had a tag team match, and they ended with Evil holding up both belts with a foot on Naito's head. Ban these niggas from wrestling each other. I'm tired of this.
Dude. I forgot to... Oh, okay, this is what it was. That match went like 22 minutes, something like that. Naito did not try until like minute 14. He did not try until minute 14. And you think about their, I think it was a baseball stadium match. He didn't try until like minute 20. Or was that the first match? It's just, I don't want to watch him ever wrestle again. Like, Evil and Yano, I want thrown into the fucking river like a murder weapon. I never want to watch them wrestle ever fucking again. Like, I watched, it was night 16, I think, at like 5:30 a.m. on Saturday. That's what I think it was. Or was it night 14? Night 14. Because I ended up doing like four shows in the last two nights to get to today. So,
James really loves y'all to watch all that shit, because your boy right here, I fell off the G1 wagon a long time ago as the wedding got closer. It was
right, and I don't blame you. Right, and the thing for me was just like I love watching New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I never watched the entire G1. So like last year, I had followed with it, and then like I fell off, and then like I want to say I missed like the last. I ended up just cherry picking instead of watching the whole thing. To catch up, right? So I was like, I'm not gonna do that again. I wanna watch the whole fucking thing. I wanna be a quote unquote completist. And boy, I remember one point on like a Saturday, I think this was night 14. It was a Yano match. And it was like 5:30 a.m. And I was like, dude, there are crackheads that make better decisions than this. What the fuck am I doing with my life? What the fuck was I thinking watching? And then I know it was night 14 because that's when they went to the main event of that card, that show fucking sucked. And then the main event of that card actually was 16. Either 16 or 14, whatever. The main event of that card that I questioned everything of what was going on with my life decision and choices was Naito versus Evil. And that's when I went on that rant. When I was just like, I just reeled off whatever. I just could not believe that they went out here and had the same fucking match in front of the same fucking audience in the same spots left and right. And it's like, I can't believe this. I cannot believe this.
So let's get to the winner and the finals. So,
Sonata started out slow. He made a run at the end, and then he ended up in the final showdown where Naito ended up losing to I believe it was Zack Sabre Jr. Oh, Kenta, that's right. It was Kenta. He ends up so Naito's eliminated in the semi-final or the semi-main event. So the block final, the B block, is Evil versus Sonata. That match is not good. Whatever. Sonata's in. Sonata has been doing this thing whenever he's main eventing in B blocks. I don't know if he's been doing this, but this is my first time I've noticed where he closes the shows and they shut off the lights and they put up the camera phones and it looks kind of like the Bray Wyatt Fireflies thing or whatever else. And that's supposed to be his, like, you know, his connection with the fans. Well, that's what Michael Cole would call it, but that's what it is. Like, you know, it's a cool looking experience. He cuts his promo. You know, he's not like he's Tanahashi on the mic or whatever else, but he cuts his little promo and he moves on. It's a cool look. And it also works well with, like, you know, his gear because of the black with the mirrored stuff on it. So, like, it's really shimmery. So anyway, Ibushi on his end to close, or his tournament, which is fantastic. I haven't looked over it, but, like, there's no way he wasn't, like, the third, at worst, the third best wrestler in this tournament. Like, his match with Suzuki is an instant classic in my book. His match with Shingo was excellent. His match with Ospreay was excellent. His match with Ishii was Lord. It's basically, like, the same exact match that Meltzer, like, did a safety check non-5-star rating to punish it. It's the same exact fucking match.
5.5.
Right. Like, it's basically the same exact match. It might be like a couple minutes shorter, but it's like super, super fast pace. And then they start chopping each other and punching each other in the throats. Like, it's kind of the same match. That was excellent. The Tai Chi match on the last night that he had.
I've been meaning to check that one out. I need to see that one from everything that I'm hearing.
Yeah, I would say this. As an Arisa Hoshiki fan, you will love it, I imagine. It is very much playing soccer instead of wrestling.
Yeah, it seems like over this past year, like, the transformation of Ibushi's wrestling style has happened before our eyes without anyone really even noticing.
Yeah, he doesn't
fly. He's cut his flying way back. Yeah. He doesn't do the golden triangle anymore. Nope. It's all, like, these fights now.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just want to say, with him making his third straight final and winning this one, the G1 final is the Golden Lovers. You know, that's you know, who they run this joint. You know, 2016, Kenny. You know, 2017, he was in a final. Yep. 18, then he turns, you know, they face each other, and then he turns it over to Ibushi. Ibushi begins making the finals from every year on. So this is just the Golden Lovers, you know, dominating out here.
So, what, 18 was Ibushi and Tanahashi, right? The final?
Right.
Yep. Yeah, now, it's so crazy that they became a tag team, because, like, the thing that I remember mostly about that, it was an incredible match, but the thing I remember most about that was after the match, like, Tanahashi, like, shows his teeth at Ibushi and was like, get the fuck out the ring. Like, and then, like, Ibushi was like, oh, my bad, I'm out of here. And it made me think of, like, remember the story you hear about Sean was telling Brett to get the fuck out the ring after WrestleMania 12? Like, it made me think of that. He's like, get the fuck out of my ring. I know you come for this, but you cannot be the ace. So it's interesting that they're a tag team and, like, they love each other, and I love them as a tag team. But it's funny how that all came full circle to me anyway. But, yeah.
So Ibushi ended up getting the win over Sonata.
Yes.
I can't say it was the greatest G1 final I've ever seen. I still thought it was pretty good. But not on the level of most G1 finals.
Right.
I don't buy Sonata at all as a top star. He's someone that wrestles the top star, I think, or someone that's in that big mix. I can never take him as a big 4 or 6 guy. I don't know why. I just don't think he connects with me like that.
I think his major problem is he's too stoic, right? Like, it's not even the thing of when people say he lacks charisma. It's not that he lacks charisma. He has his own charisma, right? Like people are into him. They swoon for fucking Sonata. The problem is that, like, he will never just let go and, like, quote-unquote feel it. I don't know if it's a thing where he's doing his head or if he's just, like, that's just not his personality trait to feel that way. Like, while watching his match against Tanahashi late in the tournament, I thought to myself, like, if he were to tag with Ibushi, or not, if he were to tag with Tanahashi somewhere down the line before, you know, it's before Tanahashi hangs it up, like, that would do him so much for him just to sit there and hang around Tanahashi and learn some things, pick up some things, just to kind of open up more to the crowd as far as, like, his from his emotions, emotive side. Like, and I'm not saying he's a bad seller or not, because he's a good seller. It's just like, he's a good seller for him, as opposed to, you know, when we talk about, like, Tanahashi, Okada, and we talk about how they, like, or Hiromu, Ishii, Suzuki, how you just, you know exactly what they're thinking. You know exactly what they're feeling almost at every single moment. And, like, with him, it's like, it's hard to get a read because he may as well be the Stone Pit Bull. He don't show you shit.
You're right. I don't know what it is. It feels like he's a B-minus at everything. Like, like literally across the board. And it's like, I've said it
there's
many
no
times.
Holes,
like,
there's no holes, but there is no, like, oh my God.
There are no peaks.
Right. I really like the match. It's so much better than the last 15 minutes of the match are way better than the first 15.
Man, that first 15 minutes was a struggle when they were just hitting each other's arms, and I had come off just watching what we're going to talk about in a couple minutes. I wrote a detailed review for that match, so get ready for that.
Yeah.
It was very, very slow. This is the longest G1 match ever. I'm
really?
Seeing. Yep.
What did it go, like, 35 minutes?
I believe 34? So. 35-12, I believe, was was the count on it.
Okay.
I seem to remember, I think it was Kenny and Naito was like 35-05 a couple of years ago. I may have that wrong. It's one of those matches that's 35-05. It could be 2018.
I know that last year's match just went right past the 30-minute mark.
Right.
It's also weird that this tournament didn't have a single draw. You know,
amazing.
Especially when, like,
they usually do one.
You got to have at least one, right? You got to, but, like, you feel like you got to go at least one. And, like, you know, the end of the tournament with the two matches with Okada and with Ishii back to back A block shows, they teased it both times, and they went close. They just, you know, ended them right before. But,
I would probably gave it like 4.25. At the most.
I think. I probably go 4.5. I think the thing for me is, like, I really, just the last 15 minutes were so incredible, and it wasn't like the first 15 minutes were trash. It was just like, okay, I know I get it. You're going 30 something minutes. And I think also comes to play is, like, what we watched before. It's like 22 minutes of, you know, just a knockdown drag out super kick fest war where, you know, someone gets their face busted or swolled up compared to, a quote unquote classically built, you know, 35-minute match. Like, yeah, I'm also thinking of that as, like, that's my bias playing, but, like, watching, it's like, yeah, I like the wrestling they're doing, But once they got past like, once they got to like a 20 minute mark, that's when the things turned around. And I thought the last, you know, 20 minutes of matches were fantastic. So like, I thought they built well. So I'm giving it the 4.5. I'm giving it the 4.5. Like, and you know, I'm also like, I like Sonata's style more than most. So that's also comes into play. But yeah, just, I think,
three in
you
a
know,
row for Ibushi.
Where does it go?
I said three in a row for Ibushi. Yeah. So like maybe Ibushi versus Naito at the dome. So I don't know if you heard the news. They're doing two domes again.
Right. Yeah. Dude, so I don't know
what type of gimmick are they gonna come up to con everybody this time?
Can they call it the recoup? Can they call it like, because I feel like it's only like, look, obviously I don't think there, you know, there's anybody that's out here renting out the dome on January 5th. Like, I think the Tokyo Dome rent is real low right about now. It's time to it's time to recoup some of this bread so that we've lost from this pandemic. So yeah, I can given what happened, do you know what happened on some of the fallout from the B Block stuff? I'm sorry, B Block, but the Block Finals.
So yeah, so Ospreay turns on Okada, forms what may be called the Empire. Women in New Japan, B Priestley debuts, and the Great Okarn, and Okada looks like he's got like some type of war he has to have. I think that's going to be the main event for Wrestle Kingdom next, like 2022 is going to be Ospreay and Okada.
Okay.
But,
so you think they don't actually get to that match like at Wrestle Kingdom next year?
I mean, they could do it there, but I don't.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to. If you got two shows, maybe that's one of your main events. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they just want to throw. I don't know what they're doing with it. Because he's still got that bridge title. He's got to figure that out. And I don't think you're putting that on, you know, like there's no reason Okada needs to be fighting for the British belt. So he's got to get rid of that and then, you know, figure it out from there. But this, I don't know. I don't see Will Ospreay. It doesn't excite me to think that he's going to be a chicken shit guy that relies on, you know, a heater, because it looks just like, you know, Evil and Dick Togo having a heater. And I would imagine the match would be miles better in Ospreay's case, but I can't trust these niggas right now. Like, because they seem to have one note that they're playing with Gato, to where it's like, yeah, we're just going to beat you over the head over and over and over with this interference and all this other shit. And you know, Okada's not himself, you know, to his legendary level. He's still really good, and I think he, you know, worked some folks at the beginning of the tournament, because every review that I've heard of him going forward was like he's essentially snapped into it, but he's doing like, you know, he's trying to do a different move right now.
He's so fucking off. He's clearly fucking off. Like, this is, I'm not saying this is the Red Balloon thing, because he was still having great matches with, or more frequency of great matches with the Red Balloon, but like, he's with the money clip thing he's doing with the rest hole, like, he is in the tournament, it felt to me like he was with the money clip later on anyway. It was almost like he was setting that up throughout the tournament, and even through the New Japan Cup. Maybe I'm giving it too much credit because I love Okada, but once you got to the last two big matches, like the Ishii match and the Shingo match at the end of the tournament, it felt as if like he had been building this up to where like this thing is like, you know, y'all boo me any, y'all cheer for the other person anytime I fucking wrestle anyway, 90% of the time. So I got some for y'all. Here's this rest hold that I'm slapping on as a submission hold, and then like, you get to the end of the Shingo match and the Ishii matches, you're just like, holy shit, he got this to work. Maybe it's just because it's those matches and it's with those two people, but like, he was clearly wrestling like he was on top as a heelish type person, or not even heelish person, but like, he was clearly on top of these matches, and the other people were trying to get from underneath to overcome him in these matches. So it's like, that's a part of it, but I remember watching the Cobb match, I was like, oh, like, all the stuff that I'm, you know, he still clearly has it. He's just dicking around. Like, you watch the first, you watch that, the Ospreay match, in its entirety, it's like, oh, damn. Like, they just had, like, a 4.5-star match in, like, 15 minutes. And then they had it, including the shitty interference and the non, and the person coming from out the fucking woodwork and Bea Priestley from out of nowhere showing up. Dude, you have no idea how weird that was for me last night watching that. I was like, Bea, what are you doing here?
You know, maybe Will just joined Odeo Tai. You know, shouts out to Murray.
Oh my god.
So they could use another worker in the group. You know,
they could always use more workers, especially with Saki and Natsuko. It's crazy. Like, I have to go look at it, but like, Natsuko may have had a better Grand Prix than Evil had at G1, because at least the matches aren't all going Jesus 20 fucking Christ. Minutes. Those matches are going 8 minutes, 9 minutes, sometimes 12.
So my read on Okada right now is that he's been the champion a million times, been the champion, had lots of long reigns. He needs someone that's going to challenge him. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like for a match, essentially. I mean for like professional pride. Like, and that's like what was my point. Like, you know, him and Kenny essentially like not quote unquote being in each other's lives anymore. It's like, who's pushing each other for excellence now. Right.
Uh-huh.
If you had to have him fight anybody and to go in the dome with, I think, you know, you try to do what you did for Kenny and be like, hey, you're going to fight Okada at the dome. And then it's a challenge for both of them. And I think you just bet your house on Will taking the challenge. Like, and maybe he breaks through, you know, to another level.
Yeah. Like, I mean, your point originally saying that, like, you feel like that should be the dome main event for, you know, was it 16 months from now or whatever instead of 6 months from now or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing my track of the calendar. It's October, right?
Right.
Okay, so making it the dome main event for the Tokyo Dome in 14 months as opposed to 2 months. Like, yeah, like that definitely makes sense, but it was just the way that turn was formed and what he said to him, like, as he was beating him up, he was like,
You're holding me back.
Like, you held me back, fuck you. And then, like, threw strikes on while he was down. It was like, that seems like a main event, you know, that seems like an immediate thing. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Either way, like, I welcome it because, like, their match before the interference was great. Just shout out to the A Block. Like, they've just brought it at, like, the last three nights, like, night 13, night 15, night 17 were. Those were all some of the best shows of the year. Those were all top 15 of shows. What are you trying to show? Yeah. So
these are all the notes that I have.
Okay. Yeah.
We're gonna
so
get to it, but
yeah. So but anyway, it was the A Block. I love you. B Block, go to hell. We're gonna move on to at this point. We're gonna move on to the start of the main event. So Rich.
So James, hit the music.
Okay, so also today was the Red Belt title match, a rematch between Takumi Iroha and Mai Iwatani, the Red Belt champion. I'm going to go through the review of the show with you, Rich, and then I'll ask you some questions. But yeah, back in February 8th this year, they had a match, a non-title match, and Takumi beat the shit out of Mayu. And it was incredible. It was all the babyface hope spots and near falls and everything. It was a fantastic match. I gave it a 4.75 at the time. I think it's the best women's match I've seen this year. Just an incredible match. And Rich, what are your thoughts on this match? Let me ask you. Did you ever watch the first match?
I've watched most of the first match and then, like, I don't know if I watched it late at night and I, like, fell asleep, but I love the work that I did see in that match.
Okay. All right. So what are your thoughts on this match that you saw today?
man, I luckily have tons and tons of notes that I wrote down pretty much like a move-by-move recap, so I will go through it. Yeah. So we opened, and you know, we had the Marvelous music playing, and it sounded like the WCW version of Macho Man's theme.
Actually, that's the Kumis. That's not actually – that's the Kumis' actual music.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then so Takumi walked in with the confidence on a zillion. Like, she had this look on her face, like, I have beat this woman's ass before.
Twice.
Then Mayu came out with her champion music, and all the stars, opened the rope for Mayu, like, please don't lose our promotion's belt, like Fire Pro Wrestling. they opened with an exchange of dap. Takumi offered the fist, and Mayu was kind of confused and stuck her palm right over the fist. It was as awkward as it was cute.
Mayu's all for the awkward goofiness.
So they opened, they had a fast exchange of strikes and kicks by Takumi that established that this is not a game and I still own you from the last time I fought you. Then she went into an ankle lock and some left leg work, and she dropped immediately into a figure four. Eventually, Mayu fought out, but she was still largely getting controlled. Takumi has taken care of the leg to the point where Mayu falls on an Irish whip, and then Takumi puts her in a stretch muffler and swings her around her head like a helicopter in North Carolina while she's in the move.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, like, just the, you know, the Cesaro swing except with a stretch muffler. I was like, oh, my God. This is... Keep going. I'm go ahead. I'm gonna tell you when we get to the 5 minute call. Because I remember when I was like, wait, this is the 5 minute call. Go ahead.
So, right. So Mayu somehow gets to the rope, and then Takumi is on the floor. She rolls out the ring. Then Takumi goes to the apron, and she throws a kick that's caught by Mayu on the floor, and Mayu dragon screws her off the apron, and both of them have leg problems now. Then Mayu reverses a whip into the barrier and gives her a high dropkick shotgun style that launches Takumi into the metal, and Mayu falls directly on the ground because she doesn't care. Then they exchange some forearms. Feels like inside the ring. Feels like Mayu doesn't really want to do this, but she holds her own. Takumi misses the Owen Hart spinning wheel kick and catches a super kick for her troubles on the recovery. In the corner, Mayu goes and then they work their way to the corner. Mayu then goes for the running three, but Takumi realizes that landing on the back of her head would be the end, so she wiggles out, but so disoriented she catches a head scissor, you know, Rey Mysterio's one move. and from there, the the crowd is very lit at that point, and Mayu does a missile dive through ropes onto Takumi. After that, Mayu went back up top to the top rope, and she did a flying crossbody to a pile of people on the wood because, also, again, she does not care.
At all.
Not at all. So Takumi's looking like she's in trouble now. Mayu went back to the rope, but Takumi jumped to one knee and glares at her like, oh, you thought this was going to be light, huh?
Right.
And then Takumi met her at the top corner, and they brawled on the top rope. And then Takumi gave her a superplex brainbuster that looks like it damages Mayu, but then Mayu grabbed Takumi off of the hold of the suplex and drops into a brilliant guillotine hold. Crowd pops for this, and she locks her in that hold for a minute. This is fucking Takumi up really bad.
Yes, I had never seen her sell like this. She was so like, oh my God, I'm about to get choked the fuck out. I'm in pain.
Right. She's looking like she wanted to give up as Mayu's yelling with these guttural screams, and after about a minute, she makes it to the ropes and catches three super kicks while seated until she nearly goes through the ropes like Bernard Hopkins.
Yes, the buzzsaw kick, yeah.
Kick to the face for a two count. Arisa Hoshiki would be proud. So then Takumi gets up and hits the glam slam on Mayu as a reset. Crowd is clapping on the one and the three. then, you know, a super kick by Takumi, and she went for a Trouble in Paradise-like move, but she missed, and Mayu hits her with a crucifix slam out of nowhere. Kick to the face back and forth while both are laid down. Arisa Hoshiki lives.
Yeah. And hold on. That right there is like, that's when you get the 5 minute call. I believe.
So Mayu tries to gather momentum, but she's snatched like a child into a German suplex by the bigger Takumi. But Mayu kicks out. Takumi looks around and she smiles and then sits down and smiles at Mayu. And then they're face to face and they start doing the hot 97 slap fest while seated. Mayu's on another planet, and she got woken up by a spinning shot from Takumi, and she morphed into Murder Mayu, where she she hit two hard strikes, and then she tombstoned Takumi. She gave her some disrespect kicks to the head while Takumi tried to stand up. At this time, like, it looks like Mayu is in full control, but Takumi fired back with a small burst of her lethal strikes. Mayu jumps up to the top rope for what looked like she was going for a poison Rana, but Takumi doesn't take the move like that, and it falls more, looked like an O'Connor roll. They're clearly fatigued at this point. Mayu then goes for the running three and hits it out of the corner for a two count and drops her on her shit. Mayu says this shit is a wrap. But Takumi reverses Mayu for a victory roll and then kicks her head all the way to Osaka Jo Hall. Mind you, they're in Korakuen. Then Takumi does a Batista bomb for the two, Last Riot style. After that, Takumi gets caught on the top rope. Mayu tries a Frankensteiner, but she gets caught like Takumi Roha has been watching Jericho tapes. But instead of just dropping her down, she reverses into a super power bomb from the second rope. Somehow, Mayu kicks out and prevents the red belt from going to Marvelous. Takumi's like, fuck this. And then she goes back up to the top rope, Swanton for two. Takumi cannot believe this shit. She sets her up for a running three, and then Mayu drops into a Hurricanrana roll up for a two. This is an awesome spot.
It was just a poetry motion. Like, that's they did it in the first match too. It just, like, I thought it was coming, and I still was like, God damn, that's so smooth.
Then after that, Takumi gives her a spinning power bomb and set up for a big kick, but Mayu collapses like Jay White.
You stop this now. Don't you dare.
And then, Takumi, or she picks her up again for the big powerbomb, but Mayu reverses it faster the second time and a repeat of the same move for two again. Takumi kicks Mayu in the head twice, and Mayu bridges for two. At this point, Takumi needs a gun. Then it was a running three where she actually hits the running three and drops Mayu directly on her neck, kills her.
Yep.
And somehow after the third time in a row, she catches Takumi slipping and rolls her over with the legs for that Okada style pin. Takumi is shocked. So am I. Kevin Nash is watching this match somewhere like Takumi or Roha. I feel your pain. Mayu did not win this match. She survived 4.5.
Yep. And this match went 22 minutes. It wasn't as shocking as the first match. It's a nice, you know, matchup, and it still sets us. It still keeps the order intact of whenever they have a final one. If they get to a third one, because like Takumi got caught. She didn't get beat. And then like the first match, she beat Mayu to death. And Mayu just could not survive it. This time she brought the fight to Takumi, and Takumi weathered it and seemingly had the match won, but Mayu had one last trick up her sleeve and pulled a rabbit out the hat. I love their matches. I never saw their first match, but I saw from years ago. They were like 2017, I think, but these two matches are great. I wonder what they're gonna. I wonder what they're gonna do, because now I turn it off. I didn't see the machination after that, but like Utami is still holding her title shot. She still holding her title shot, so I don't know if that's gonna be in a couple weeks or what. I just turned it off. I have no idea, but they got big shows to do, because they have another Korakuen in a couple weeks. They have they're doing the Idian Arena. The number one, where they just had a G1 show in Osaka on the 20th of December. And then they also still have the Korakuen year in climax. So, they're going to have to fill out another big card eventually. And if they have a final blow off of Mayu and Takumi, I hope eventually they get back to this match, because you know, they're just great together.
Yeah, yeah. So at the end, like, Mayu was so exhausted, she didn't make any pre-match comments, but she said she was too tired to speak, and the next time she sees Takumi, she wants to be a tag team partner with her, and the whole crowd laughed. Then, of course, Itami came out, and eventually I had to switch to the G1 final, but she said she's going to take that red belt from her, essentially.
Okay. Have you ever saw the Grand Prix final from 2018?
No, I only saw 2019's Grand Prix final.
Okay, so that was like a month into Utami's... she debuted like the 10th of August, and then she was in the Grand Prix final, right, against Mayu. I would check it out. That's all I'm going to say to you. To show you what they could do together, even though she was, you know, a month into her career. But yeah, she, that was a great match. But yeah, I just, it's really interesting to like to watch that match and to watch the G1 final. It is like, wow, they outdid a G1 final on the same day.
Fire the men.
I never would have thought, like, on the day of a G1, I would see a better match from the same fucking day. I never thought I would see something like that, but here we are.
Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's crazy, man. No knock against, yeah, you know, Bushi and them, but, like, they had a great match as well. Just, you know. Did you see the levels? Did you see the love? Yeah. Did you see the swelling on Takumi's face by the end?
No, I didn't. I didn't catch that.
Oh, she may have broke an orbital bone.
Oh,
yeah, like her, like it blew up big on her, like on her cheek, like. And I think it came out. I think it came when Mayu gave her a front kick. So it was like, God damn, y'all hitting each other that hard? Damn.
So I don't know if you've seen this, but B did come out with her SWA championship.
I heard.
so we'll see. Will Ospreay, faction leader. About time. So yeah, I guess we can fly over to Jacksonville now. We've the AEW anniversary show. I can't really go as deep into my thoughts surrounding the show as I like to, but it has been a year essentially since AEW's launched. I've loved this show from the inception. I thought it's been, you know, just the best show going in that time period. I love how it's booked. I think it's really been the main reason that I've, you know, stayed a huge pro wrestling fan. They still have plenty of stuff. Like, you get the feeling like they didn't blow through too much already. Right. They have tons of fresh matches still and fresh directions. And I love this fucking show and this company.
Yeah. I feel that just like most of the wrestling that I watched this year, like, clearly it's all hampered by the fact that there are no, you know, fans in the normal circumstance, but everybody has made, you know, their different various types of lemonade. But I feel like for America anyway, AEW has made the best lemonade. So, you know, shouts out to them in these circumstances. I'm still iffy about the fact that, you know, bringing in fans, whatever else, but, you know, it's a business. And I wish it didn't. I wish that they could just do empty arena, whatever else, but I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. But yeah, Wednesdays are normally a fun night of the week, because I get to tune in and watch Dynamite, and Thursdays end up being fun because I get to like watch NXT with no commercial breaks, just go straight to network and press play. So yeah, like, I mean, I don't know, if not for Wednesday Night Wrestling, what my connection would be to American pro wrestling. I would literally be one of those like people that Nick Aldis like talked about fetishizing Japanese pro wrestling. I don't know what the fuck I'd be watching. I don't know. I just do not know. Like, not to say that, like, you know, they don't do good wrestling on the main roster. Like, I think Roman's doing some great things right now. I think, you know, all that, but just 5 hours, just the bridge has been burned. Like, I watch pay-per-views. I'm not, I it was going to take something really massive and mammoth from like my for my relationship with WWE's main roster shows to change from what it's been over the last, you know, year, 14 months, whatever it's been. Like, I'm just through with them. I'll hear about whatever happens and I'll just watch pay-per-views and hope that they have good matches, because they have a lot of dudes I like, but nah. Like, AEW has me, and NXT has me. Nobody else really, like, nobody else is appointment viewing for me in America.
Yeah, so we opened up, there were four title matches on this show tonight.
How many changed hands?
Zip, zilch, zero. You
know. All right, go ahead. So,
look, should any of them have changed?
Probably not. Probably not. Which says something about the challengers.
Yeah, so we opened with FTR and the Best Friends. That was okay. I thought, you know, I don't know. Best Friends are usually hit and miss for me. I'm never really impressed by them. The one time I was impressed by them, of course, was the street fight, and I felt like they were bigger stars when they came out the next week. This was okay. They, of course, had to, you know, do the angle kind of in the middle of the match to spin them off in another direction. But FTR, of course, you know, cheating to win towards the end. And, you know, they ended up getting a win as they continue to march forward. They've beaten everybody. But every time, you know, they get one of these wins, it's like, y'all fuckers out here, you know. Doing this whole shit. So,
yeah, I like this match. I gave it 3.5. It's on my recommended match thing, that list, that stupid list I've compiled. But yeah, I like this match. I just got to say, like, when they wrestle their style, they're very effective in it. It's just when they start throwing in ideas on how to like find a middle ground, I don't think they're as successful, but like them having their match in AEW, I've enjoyed almost all those their, you know, style of FTR matches.
So in the middle of the match, the angle that I was talking about was Kip Sabian was playing an arcade game in the crowd. They took a bump into it. Essentially, Penelope Ford went to go get Miro, and then we got the course correction Miro. after the match, Miro ran in, destroyed Chuck and Trent, and then they cleared the ring. Kip Sabian was, you know, talking a bunch of shit to the camera, and not too long ago, I remember, I was like, damn, Kip Sabian's a great manager. And then I saw Penelope like behind him, and it was like, yeah, man, I think this works much better the other way. kind of sucks, but I feel like Kip has a long way to go. But as I said, lots of course correction with Miro here, way more physical than he's been, and angry and everything else. I don't know exactly what they're doing with him. Feels like they got him on the back burner to start using him in the next couple of cycles, because he kind of just came out of nowhere. However, that led into a squash match where Miro and Kip Sabian against Lee Johnson and Sean Maluta, much-traveled jobber. Lee Johnson never tagged into the match. Sean Maluta gets whipped by Miro, and Miro botches his own finish, even though it's a submission move. He goes for the camel clutch deal, the game over, misses the cuff the first time, but then grabs him and fucks him up. So, yeah. But yeah, you know, this is a big course correction. So
yeah, like, do you think, like, what do you think they were actually going for with the you know, at first with him? Like, do you really think they were really going to go through with this whole thing with Kip and the best man thing and the bachelor party? Or do you think like eventually he was going to snap, or do you think they're just like, snap now, get it over with now?
I honestly don't know, because like, I don't see them competing as a regular tag team together. This is like largely to, like, I think with AEW they align people so they can do tag team matches with them, at different times, to spin off into, you know, singles matches or whatever.
Right.
I think Miro's not, whatever their cards are with him, they're not going to start until after Full Gear, I think. So he's kind of just getting introduced, I think.
Okay.
So then they threw it to the back where Lance Archer was beating up John Moxley. Just whooping him backstage. Yep. Nobody, no control or over anything back there. Then the announcers previewed the World Title Eliminator Tournament, which began next week, and we got our matches, James. All that fantasy booking we did a couple weeks ago, we were close, but we did not get Colt Cabana, who was added on. But our first round matchups, we have Rey Fénix versus Penta L0M. We've got a rematch with Joey Janela and Kenny Omega. Every match they've had together has been awesome here. Then we got Hangman Page and Colt Cabana, and then Wardlow and the Jungle Boy. So this one looks like, I think there's only one match that's in question here. I feel like the rest of it, you can kind of see where it's going. But this is, you know, like I prefer this rather than Mystery Meat.
Yeah, yeah, or you know, spin a wheel, make a deal, but
yes. Later. Lucha Brothers gonna have a match. I think all the four of these matches are happening next week on Dynamite. So,
oh wow,
can't wait. They're doing the whole first round, and then that tag match. So,
what's the tag match again? I'm blinking.
So the tag match is I think it's a. Some type of fatal four-way maybe, or elimination.
Oh, yeah, might be just fatal four-way. Yeah, for the number one contender. Yeah, yeah, that Young Bucks are probably going to win.
Okay. Yeah. MJF came out. He called out Chris Jericho. They did a big back-and-forth promo, and MJF, he gave Sammy Guevara his jacket this week, and Sammy showed up with the chopper jacket on.
Bro.
Drowning in that shit.
Bro, could Anthony Davis have worn that jacket?
Maybe.
I think it would have been too big for Anthony Davis. That's how long those arms were. Like, come on, man. Y'all know, like, we get the joke, but god damn, like, they made it so ridiculous. Like, that man, you know, people say you're swimming in your suit. That boy was out here lapping.
Yeah, that man was backstroking out here. you know, but this was all, like, pretty interesting. MJF just quick on his toes here, just like, you know, finally admits he wants to join the Inner Circle after, you know, Jericho had to force it out of him. But the rest of the Inner Circle doesn't want MJF. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of Cody trying to break up the Bullet Club vibes here with MJF trying to break up the Inner Circle. Eventually, he's going to win a couple of those guys over and something's going to happen. But it feels like that storyline with Cody and Kenny is getting flipped over to Jericho and MJF.
Could be.
But,
did Jericho say that, like, you know, I understand you guys don't like it, but, like, hey, MJF, let's talk it over a steak dinner. And I was like, he's going to take this man to the Longhorn, ain't he? He's going to take that man to a Tallahassee Longhorn.
Longhorn be bussing.
Like, it's funny. Like, this rich motherfucker's out here going to chain steakhouse. Like, Chris Jericho, he's just like one of us.
Yeah. So after that, we got a Britt Baker role model video package with Britt and Tony Schiavone at the spa. God. Bitch, I was hollering with this shit. So Britt and Reba freaked out because they thought Tony was naked, but they had him nipples covered. They waxed his chest, and then Britt basically cut a promo about the next step in our comeback. Just awesome presence here from Britt, and they apparently was a shoot that they tricked Tony into something. Told me he was getting a facial or something, and then, you know, gave him that. So more Tony Schiavone and Britt Baker, please. I will never turn it down.
Yeah, they are, like, they've gotten each other over, both of them. Like, this is like Macho Man and Mean Gene, like, version of AEW. It's like, I can already imagine, like, the cutoffs just from this year of, like, them together and the ridiculous things they've done. Like, it's been a smashing success, both of them together, that pairing.
So they announce, so up next we have the TNT Championship match, Cody and Orange Cassidy. These guys went to a time limit draw. Cody ended up retaining the title. In the middle of the match, they announced that Darby Allin would be getting a TNT Championship match at Full Gear. This started really slow. I thought it turned around towards the end. But a lot of this reminded me that it feels like the only thing I wrote this in the comment section. The only thing consistent about Cody is his inconsistency, because him on offense was just a drag through a lot of this match. Orange Cassidy, it felt like he tapped into a little bit of the fire that he showed in that first Jericho match. I thought towards the end he had the clear visual pinfall over him, but you know, time just expired. I think the draw was actually a good move here, because I think people immediately thought he was going to lose the second they saw Darby Allin there. He'll probably end up losing, but it'll be another day. I ended up liking it by the end.
Okay. Not a bad match by any means. I would say it's a good match. Is it a match that I'd recommend? No. There are things they did. Not things. There's one thing in particular that bothered me. I don't know why they felt so compelled to say that Darby Allin is going to face the winner of this eventually in the middle of the match. They couldn't have waited until after the match. Like, I'm in the middle of watching, I'm like, oh, okay, so Cody's retaining. Alright.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like 10 minutes left of this match for me to watch. But you just snatched the stakes from out of my cold, dead hand. And that's not Cody or Orange Cassidy's doing. That's something that production has to figure out in commentary. But yeah, it got to a point to where, like, probably halfway through, I was like, oh god, they're going to tease the time limit. Especially because, yeah, I was like, they're going to tease the time limit, and I don't know, like I'm not that big on Orange Cassidy wrestling for things like that, like, matter. Like, I don't mean like he can't, you know, it's just weird. It's like, okay, so he just wrestled Jericho because Jericho got pissed because he's a goofball, doesn't give a fuck, and he's a slacker or whatever else. And now, like, he can't, and now he wants the belt, but like, why does he want the belt? It's like the same thing when, like, you know, Bray Wyatt or somebody or some goofy character, like, wants the belt. Why? Nothing that we've ever seen displayed to you says you give a flying fuck about something like this. So why do you want it now? And, like, I feel like you kind of need to address that in a way. And, you know, I'm not even going to get on Cody for the whole, like, you know, the story, I guess, off air, not on Dynamite, that they brought up on Dynamite, that he was going to, you know, lock up with Orange Cassidy, as if any wrestler fan is supposed to give a fuck if anyone locks up. Like, that is some old timer shit, bro. Like, I'm gonna lock up. Like, dude, nobody gives a fuck if you lock up in 2020. Like, there are
moments. Like, I didn't think about that at all.
Dude, I'm not gonna get into it because, like, it doesn't really matter. This is just a little cute thing that Cody did to add a storyline element. So, like, I'm not gonna begrudge him for that, but I'm just saying, like, Whatever. But yeah, just it's just a weird matchup. Like, I never thought of the idea of Cody wrestling Orange Cassidy. I do like the idea of Cody wrestling, like, the younger, quote unquote, you know, indie guys or whatever else, where he, like, can play heelish and, you know, work him over, especially like Darby, for example. I love their matchups, but it just felt like there was something missing for me, and I'm glad I gotta say I am so glad that I did not watch. I believe what match almost went to a draw, whatever. Oh, Night 13, Shingo versus Okada. I'm so glad I did not watch that weekend and see them tease a time limit draw, and then they go to a time limit draw. I would have excoriated this match. I've been like, are you out of your minds? Like, y'all trading the fact that, like, most of you people used to be in New Japan. This looks like y'all are just trying to do this. Like, man, after that match happens, move it back a week. Just move it back 1 week. But whatever. But yeah, so it was a good match, but, you know, I think I like so a lot more Cody matches from earlier in the year than this. So what right. do you? So what do you think?
So about? After that, Alex Marvez was backstage with Archer and Roberts.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I think we're getting.
Yeah, there's a big delay between us two.
About what part?
I was going to ask you, like, okay, so how do you think this is going to play out between those three going to the in the pay-per-view, like, with the TNT title, with Darby and Cody and Orange Cassidy? Because they're going to have the rematch, what, in 2 weeks? Right?
Yeah, rematch in 2 weeks. I think Cody would probably beat him there. Okay. And then you go to the pay-per-view, and you got to ask the question, is it time for Darby to get that big win, or do you treat it like it's, you know, like it's Okada trying to dethrone Tanahashi and just beat him again, and then, you know, push it back again? So I can see either way. I don't know.
Yeah, because if there's going to be a lot of fans, then I can see it. But, like, that's one of those things where, like, you kind of want to say that for fans. But then again, who knows when we're going to get fans? So, yeah, and maybe they're playing it by ear. I don't know.
I can see an argument for either situation happening. If you want to crown him, then crown his ass.
Right,
but
right.
I think you could fully have Cody beat him again.
And then
be like, what the fuck? Like, and be like, yo, you're not as close as you think. Like, and you kick it down the road.
Can't kick too far, but you can kick it down the road, yeah.
Yeah. Then, of course, as I was saying, Alex Marvez is backstage with Lance Archer and Roberts. Marvez said the world title match was in jeopardy after Archer attacked Moxley, and then Mox came in and they had a big pull apart backstage. After that, Tony Schiavone was interviewing Matt Hardy in the crowd. Matt said he's healthy and returned to clear from the ring. Whatever the fuck, you know, what happened to him, you know, he did not say it was a concussion or anything, but... Then there was a video that started playing. There was a man with a hood in said video. I was like, oh no, Retribution is here. But it was not Retribution. It was someone lighting stuff on fire. And then what do you know? It's Sammy G. He took responsibility for the attack on his knee. And that was the storyline reason for him not being cleared, obviously. Sammy said this will never be over between them. And I'm glad. I'm glad, because Sammy needs this fucking win over this guy. So I don't have an issue with them going back to this. And I hope Sammy gets a big win on this guy and wins the feud.
When this happened, I was like, really? Again? Not that, like, their matches are bad. It was like, kind of just get each other away from each other. Like, that met, you know, that thing, I wouldn't say it's cursed, but it's like, it got delayed because Sammy had to go to sensitivity training. Then Matt Hardy almost fucking died. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like, maybe it's a clean slate for both of them. But, you know, if it's a must that Sammy gets that win, then I guess, but hopefully it's a regular match. No stunts. You already did two stunt matches.
You could do that.
Regular match, please. Yes, we're going to lower the stakes as it progresses. We're going to pull an NXT. Yes, like, let's lower the stakes. Yeah. You know, bring it close to home.
There's a way around that, though. They could really say, you know, I really want to prove I'm the better man than you. I don't want any, you know, gimmicks. I don't want any, you know, any weapons. I just want to prove that I will beat your ass myself. Like,
yeah. You know. Now that I'm thinking about it, I have a sneaking suspicion that, like, this is where they pulled the Hardy compound. Because remember, they were trying to pull out the Hardy compound for Matt for months, and they never got to it. And you know what? When it comes to them, they always find a way to get back to whatever the fuck they always wanted to do. So maybe this is when they actually do the cinematic, you know, match or whatever else. Especially given how Matt is right now. I don't need to see him do a live match right now. Like, give him some time, let him do a match, and let him shoot a bunch of shit and put it together. That might be... I'd be okay with that at this point. Like, I can trust AEW with cinematic matches. I can't trust WWE with it.
So, after Tony Schiavone was in the ring with Tully, FTR, and a lottery tumbler... I fucking hated this.
Oh, you did too?
Like, why the fuck are we doing a fucking random lottery?
When you have a ranking system,
the challengers.
Well,
correct.
See, Rich,
when you have a ranking system, and they've shown that they use the ranking system
in the
tag team stuff, because, like, they did a gauntlet where they entered in the order of the you know, of the rankings. Right. So it's like, well, why'd they forget about that?
Well, this was, well, you see, Rich, when you have a top five of contenders, and then you put, was it five of them or four of them in a gauntlet match together, and you beat all but one of those teams, and then like you already blown that off, and then you just have you're just compelled to do another multi-person tag match with contenders. You got to figure out a way to not just beat all these fuckers again. So this is what they came up with, and like, whatever, man. The match is gonna be cool.
Match is gonna be great. I can't wait.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, the match is gonna be cool. Match is gonna be great. But you already know, like, if this had been the E, would have been like, y'all just rematch this shit. Like, I mean, I don't know if this, what's the format of this match? Obviously, it's not a gauntlet eliminator thing again. What is this match?
Nah, these are all different teams that, besides the Bucks, that were in the other one. Yeah, it's a fatal four way.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a great match, so whatever, but I just don't like the idea of having a ranking system and then saying, all right, like, did anybody go out there and earn it the harder way? No, just a chance match? Okay, fine. Whatever. Like, yeah. It's gotta be like, what number were the Bucks before this match?
I would think they're number two, I think, I saw on the rankings.
Okay, that's not as bad. That's not as bad. I thought they were like four, and it'd be like, damn, bro, like, I was ranked number two, and all of a sudden, like, I'm fighting for these tag titles. For me to get a tag title match, I gotta be in a triple, a fatal four-way match. Like, what kind of convoluted shit is this? Whatever. Yeah. It's not the end of the world. It's gonna have a great match, whatever.
The four teams are going to be Young Bucks, Private Party, Butcher and the Blade, Go Big Butch, and Silver and Reynolds. So we already know this shit is going to be lit. So I don't know why I'm talking down, but they're going to shut me up next week, I imagine.
So okay, so can we get a handle on what is going? Okay, so think of the Elite, right? Hangman's an emo alcoholic. Kenny is upset with his emo alcoholic friend and, I don't know, being withholding of emotional support for this fucking guy he still cares about, I guess, and still it bothers him. The Young Bucks are, I don't know, are they heels? I guess they're heels. If they're not heels, yeah, being assholes right now.
Right.
And then, presumably, they're gonna win this match and then fight another set of heels, which is like, okay, whatever, like, we watch heel versus heel matches. We rarely see it in AEW, but we've seen them. So it's like, now that it seems like all of these people are at this place right now, and they were most of the top baby faces in the company, like, who has, like, they have not really set up anybody to replace them if this is actually where they're all headed down these paths. So, like, I don't know, man.
Hangman's clearly going to be a big baby face through it the whole time. If you look at, like, who he's going to be lined up against, like, he's going to fight Colt Cabana, then he's going to fight Wardlow, and then, at you know, they have their own dynamic in the finals.
But
I don't think anyone's necessarily going to replace them, like, because it's going to be them anyway. And the Bucks are in that weird place. Like, nobody's going to actually boo the Young Bucks unless they catch, like, somebody that has, like, lightning in a bottle for a short time, like, how Hangman had against them in Chicago.
But the Young Bucks can get booed against, the Young Bucks can go out here and get booed against, like, Private Party or, Jurassic Express. Like, they'll get booed if they continue going on this path, they'll get booed. But it's just like, okay, so you are turning them into whatever you want, not prototypical baby faces, so is anybody going to step into these roles, or are you going to groom anybody for these roles or replace them, like, immediately because it seems like this is where it's headed? Like, maybe it's not. Maybe it's all, they're all just mad right now. Everybody at least mad. Okay.
Yeah, everybody is.
But, like, in the meantime, while, like, you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega for multiple weeks have not, like, had matches, can we, like, get a babyface going, for fuck's sake, besides Jon Moxley? Please? Anyone? Anyone at the top?
Thanks. I guess that's where Orange Cassidy came in Darby and
Orange Cassidy ain't enough.
Yeah. I have to look at, you know, whatever the cards were the last couple of weeks, but I feel like I'm forgetting somebody.
Right.
Then we had the they announced that the main event now is a no DQ match. Then we had a Carl Sheeta and Big Swole. This was not great at all. I don't know what they was doing. This was rough. Like, and this shit got to be better. Flat out. Like
it do.
Like I can't come out here and say, yeah, you know, we need to go ahead and dedicate more time when, you know, this is the result. So, like I think they just had a bad night with each other, because I've seen Swole wrestle better before, and Swole wasn't really the issue here. I don't think.
There's weird miscommunications and, like, weird mistakes that, like, you've never even seen Sheeta make before. It was weird. It was a bad night. It was a real bad night. Like, that's the worst I've ever seen Sheeta, I think.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I don't know what... like, I do know where it's going, but they've got to kind of give us a little bit more because, like, I think Big Swole's biggest strength is that she can talk.
Yep.
But you don't ever see her talk. Like, this should have been, like, this should have got, like, at least a promo earlier in the night, like, 30 seconds. Say, hey, Big Swole, you're facing Hikaru Shida. You know, what are you going to do? Like, this is your first shot at the title. How do you feel about this? And then sell your match in 30 seconds, like something like that. Like, I think they've got to play these women to their strengths rather than just this is the time. It's like they're trying to fit round pegs and square holes with them, I think.
Yeah, I never really thought about it as far as a miscastment. But what I will say is they gotta do better with, like, the bare minimum type stuff. So, for example, their pay-per-view's coming up. When's pay-per-view? How many weeks away? 3 weeks? 4 weeks?
3 weeks.
3 weeks away. All right. Like, we all assume it's going to be a rematch with Nyla, right? Say again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
it looks like Nyla.
Yeah, so, like, I don't remember that brawl from the week before was the last time I remember even seeing Nyla. I don't know what Nyla's been up to since she's lost the title, really. Like, I know she got Vicky as a manager, but, like, I'm guessing they're just
lots of dark.
Yeah, they're just all, she's been just off Dynamite. So it's like, it's nice that they've, you know, the last couple of weeks they've brought her back, but it's like, I don't even know what the fuck she's been doing. So, she's on TV, but, like, you know,
she did a match with on TV against somebody.
Did she squash Colin King?
I think she did. She squashed Colin King on Dynamite and Dark.
Okay. Yeah, I seem to remember her beating the hell out of Colin King, and I don't watch Dark, so. Okay. Yeah, I mean, they've given her enough to say that, like, yeah, she can be get a rematch, but it's like, do you feel it? You know, I don't feel it. At least not yet. And they still got 3 weeks, but, like, I just don't feel it yet. And, you know, we can kind of see when it comes to, like, the tag stuff with the Young Bucks, with Kenny and Hangman, with Jericho and MJF, with Moxley and this Kingston thing that's, like...
And Cody with the TNT belt, like, right. We see the creative energy getting doled out, and this is what I often talk about.
Yeah, like you feel, like, you feel the anticipation for this stuff when it's, like, you know, it's not, you know, all you need is you got to put in some bare basic shit in this, like, if you're gonna do it. So, you know... And, you know, we've talked about this for over a year now, so, you know, they've been better at different points, but this is one of the weaker moments in the last while.
Yep. So, they announced, MJF and Jericho for next week's Dinner Debonair, Orange Cassidy and Cody in the TNT title rematch 2 weeks from now. Then Kingston, Penta, and Phoenix came out to the desk. They did a short Shawn Spears video package with Scorpio Sky. And then they tied it all in by saying, you know, Spears saved Matt Sydal from Scorpio Sky, or Sky saved him from Matt Sydal. Saved Matt Sydal from Spears, sorry, on Late Night Dynamite. So I didn't, like, put two and two together on that. So good on them for tying that in. But Kingston said he's here to watch the main event, which is up next. And then we had John Moxley and Lance Archer. And these guys had like a condensed version, I think, of their Wrestle Kingdom match, even duplicating some spots, like with the apron DDT to the double tables. And, you know, it was physical. It looked like it hurt. And it was just kind of a it was a finish kind of like the Takumi Roha and Mayu, like, you know, do your big finish and then you get caught slipping.
Yeah, I'm with you. It did remind me a lot of their match. I don't think it's as good as yeah, because that match was like, what? But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I like the match a lot. I think my issue, or I don't have an issue. I take that back. I think, I don't know, man. I feel like Kings is a weak challenger. You know, I just do. And I think, like, you know, like, oh, that's where the head is. Like, he just dispatched this dude. Like he had this thing with Archer. Archer clearly threw his ass over the top in that battle royal and he was eliminated. He's been saying that he was eliminated. Unless there's something I'm mistaken, he was clearly eliminated. He got choked out and then for ref stoppage, even though he's like, you know, you talk about how he's such a, you know, Kawada fan or whatever else, and then like he got beat with he got a ref stoppage and he's like complaining about a ref stoppage that like I never tapped out. It's like, I don't care. He stopped the match because air wasn't getting to your brain. Like, what are you...
Right. You lost.
Yeah, and it's like, obviously, you know, I guess that's supposed to be the heat. So, like, I'm not... But it's just like, am I supposed to really, like, hate Kingston because, like, he's a slime ball that wants a title shot? Like, yeah, lots of slime balls want title shots. So, like, that doesn't really bother me. You know, like...
Do I think they're going to set it up to be like some type of death match. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. Like, and to be quite honest, like, I'm open to it because, like, I think on pay per view they'll have a better match than what they had before anyway. And I liked their match the first time, so I'm open to it. Just like, but it does feel like a weak challenger if this is the pay per view challenger. Indeed, it does. Like,
go ahead. I was going to say, it feels like, hey, Moxley, we got to get you, like, one more pay-per-view match, but, like, we don't really want to give you someone of great value to go against right now. Right. So we'll put this guy who has a lot of credibility, and, of course, people can see, you know, you guys, and, you know, you can do a unique match with him because he's fought giants, he's fought technical old-school guys, he's fought a lot of people, actually. He's had a very long and fruitful title reign, and it feels like he's going to go the entire year with it, and then, you know, then it'll be back in play for whoever wins this tournament.
Yeah. I think the thing maybe just be like, maybe if they had just did this Kingston match here and saved the Archer match for pay-per-view, maybe, to me, that feels like that makes more sense in my head as far as, like, you had this match, it got built up, it got delayed because of COVID, and, like, Archer to me is a bigger match than Kingston, but maybe this is a thing where, like, they're using the title match to build up Kingston as opposed to the title match, but, you know, whatever.
And think about it. If they do Moxley and Kingston, I don't know if it's the strongest match on paper, but they are buffering it with, like, two very anticipated matches.
Yeah, it seems like so.
If they go that direction with Kenny and Hangman and then Young Bucks and FTR, which, I mean, I don't have time this week to get into, I think, the missteps that they've made with Young Bucks and FTR, but it's a very interesting road, to say the least, to how it looks like they're going to get there.
Right, and I'm still waiting to figure out when I'm supposed to care that they actually finally fight, because I don't. That's really all I had. Like, they're gonna have a match and I'm gonna be like, cool, but, like, as far as, like, their build to get there and the road there, still waiting, bruh. Still waiting.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's the show. I thought it was a good show overall. I didn't anticipate on any titles changing. Maybe the TNT title, but these are clearly TV challengers. That's what it seemed like. So they're not switching no belts like it looks like until the pay-per-view at this rate.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what happened with NXT. NXT actually had a few good matches. The opener with wait till you hear this, Rich. Roddy Strong and Bobby Fish of the Undisputed Era fought in a number one contenders match for the NXT Tag Team titles. They wrestled.
Oh my god!
They wrestled Lorcan and Birch. They had a good ass match. It made you think of their match they had, or parts of the match when O'Reilly was in it with from Brooklyn. I think that was Brooklyn 4. Ultimately, Undisputed win. They go on to face Fandango or Breezango. There was a Candice LeRae versus Shotzi match for the number one contenders shot. Winner gets EO at Halloween Havoc, and I believe that's 2 weeks from now. Gotta say, this was, you know, we always talked about, like, Mia was the in-ring general for NXT when she was there, and, like, she is, for the people like Shotzi that have spots, really good spots, but, like, trying to focus on the notes between the music, you put her in there with someone like Mia. Well, now that's Candice, and I really liked their match. I think I gave it 3.5. Really good match. Great story. It felt like a real fight. It felt like a real thorough fight and contest to earn the right to go fight EO. At the end, continuing on with the Indy Hartwell plot line, Indy showed up behind the and handed Candice some brass knucks. She hit her with the brass knucks and she ended up pinning Shotzi. I always called her Shotzi instead of Shotzi for some weird fucking reason. But yeah, Shotzi's getting better. So that's a good thing. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the Indy thing. As far as they're pairing, like, seems like they're pairing up, like, the non-stylish vets that are in the PC with actual the vets. So, another example, before the last takeover, there was interaction between Johnny and Austin Theory where he said, go fight Damian Priest and soften him up for me. And, you know, I might have something for you. I'm going to have an opportunity for you. I don't think he said it in those exact Vincent Man terms, but that was the illusion. Well, Austin Theory got his ass whooped, and then Johnny got his ass whooped. So they're mad at each other because they're both assholes. So it was like, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You didn't do what I asked you to, I'm going to whoop you. And boy, did Johnny Gargano whoop this dude that has like 50 pounds on him. He some of those, you remember those super kicks that Mayu was giving to Kumi when she was on a knee? Some of them, it was like, you are going to learn your lesson about professional wrestling with Johnny Gargano. It was a very good match. And, you know, it continues that pattern that I mentioned with you with Austin Theory, where, like, they clearly see something in him because they keep putting him in the ring with these people, whether it was Adam Cole or it was Damian Priest or it was Roderick Strong or now it's Johnny. Like, they keep putting him in the ring. And Ciampa as well. Like, keep him in the ring with these people trying to, you know, accelerate his learning process. The problem is he shouldn't be on TV, right? So there's that. But
heard some interesting stories also from people that were in attendance there that they were trying to get the crowd to cheer for, I believe it was Theory, and the crowd wasn't having that shit, right? Because the crowd's clued in, right? And then they revolted and cheered for Johnny Gargano instead.
Yeah, but it was weird because on the, because they're dubbing crowd noise, they're mm-hmm. they're booing both of them, which is weird. So it's like, that's weird.
Yeah, but that's probably the dub.
Yeah. Really good match. Like, It was based on like teacher versus student. Johnny Wooden was like, lesson number one, don't be predictable. Lesson number, he's going through, like doing, you know, cut at beginning. He cut like, he said a couple one liners, whatever else. Like, you know, this is one, this one, this two, or whatever else. And then like, he came back on, you know, using countering moves. But like, Austin Theories has this move where he rolls in from the apron, like rolls in and goes for a shotgun drop kick. He rolled in one time and Johnny caught that man with a super kick. That shit was so clean. But yeah, he ends up beating him at the end with the slingshot DDT.
Look at Johnny Gargano winning matches.
He's stupid. So you end up getting later in the show, Rhea Ripley, or no, you get an interview on back with Raquel. Raquel's like, I've been waiting for this. You know, I've been waiting for this. I've been anticipating this for a while. They interviewed Raquel, and Raquel's like, Rhea been talking shit and thinks she runs this place. Well, I'm gonna see her at, I'm gonna issue her a challenge. I want to see her at Halloween Havoc in 2 weeks. All of a sudden, you hear from over yonder, we can do it right now. Pull apart. pull apart. And I'm just like,
I'll drop you.
Bruh. I was like, move. Let these horses go. Let them things fly, boy. Move out the way. I've been waiting to see these women go out here and whoop on each other. Move. So, they broke it up and they said they're going to have the match.
Ain't nothing funnier than hearing, oh, we can do it right now. Yes, and you only expect
yes,
it.
Yes. Yes. I think this match is going to be like, I'm optimistic about this match.
They need to go 5 minutes.
Yes.
They need to go 5 minutes. All yes. Suplexes all and chops.
Suplexes, chops, and forearms. Yes. So, let's see what else happened. There was Ashanti Adonis versus Jake Atlas. They were doing like anything you can do, I can do better. One of us been shipping each other with flips or whatever else. All of a sudden, Legado del Fantasma came out, and they sent them flying with stereo dives. Out comes Fantasma in this jacket, this shiny ass green jacket that was Raw, and then he with a chair. And then all of a sudden, they go whoop him 3-on-2. All of a sudden, in comes Swerve. Hands them a set of chairs, so now it's 3-on-3, and you got one chair, we got three chairs. They back off, so they're setting up a match eventually. I thought we were going to be done with that, but apparently not. Then I'm trying to think what else we end up getting on this show. We end up getting the main event, North American title match. Damian Priest versus Dexter Lumis. I could not believe this. This was the main event. This was not advertised, bro.
How dare it? Look, they knew better. They knew better, James. They knew better than to come out here and try people with thinking people wanted to watch Dexter Lumis. But you know what? Also, they didn't know better because they ended up getting doubled in the ring.
Right.
When they sent this nigga out there.
Right. So,
try to pull a fast one.
The match stinks unless Damian Priest is in control. Shocker. And not even to say that, like, Lumis stinks. It's just the gimmick is just... So, at the end of it, he ends up on the apron with the ref's back turned, talking to Priest. And then in comes Cameron Grimes with a double stomp on the apron. And then Priest doesn't see it. The Priest finishes him and thinks he won. Then all of a sudden, as he's leaving out the ring, he sees out the corner of his eye that Cameron Grimes about to try to, you know, pick the bones. He ends up laying him out, and then he goes to celebrate or whatever else. You know, Priest and Grimes had smoked just a couple months ago. So he goes celebrating, and he's like, hey, cameraman, come follow me. I want to show you something. So he goes to come to the crowd to show, like, the new graphic for whatever, like, bow and arrow thing he does. And then Johnny comes out of nowhere and lays him out. Because... I forgot what it was. I think it's Johnny beat the loser, Austin Theory. He's number one contender for the North American title. So him and Candice both come out and they're happy because, you know, they got their heat back after losing on the pay-per-view and they're getting title rematches. And out comes your boy, Regal and says, you guys are real happy about yourselves, huh? All right. Well, I got something for you. The host will decide what happens with y'all in y'all title matches at Halloween Havoc. And then you get Shotzi saying that it will be a... What's the shit again? What's the gimmick? I forgot the gimmick.
Spin the wheel, make
spin,
a deal.
It will be spin the wheel, make a deal for the NXT women's and NXT North American title matches.
It's not the part of Halloween Havoc that I would copy,
right?
Or whatever. I would be copying the aesthetic, right. the Halloween aspect, right. of it. The do a costume, yeah. battle royal, do the stuff that they do like on the Largo Loop, like, you know, do a battle royal with costumes on,
right.
play it up, be hokey. I don't know about the spin wheel make a deal match because,
I mean.
Yeah, look, that's something else.
I'm okay with the idea that they're going to do some ridiculous, they're going to do some plunder hardcore match anyway, so have at it. Whatever, like, mm-hmm. call whatever you want to call it, spooky Halloween thing or whatever else. It's like when they go to Memphis and have a Memphis or a rock and roll, you know, or a R&B hardcore match with a drum set, like, whatever. Like, but... You're right. They have to do that. They could just use the aesthetic how they did with In Your House Takeover. Like, just use the aesthetic, mm-hmm. put a big ass pumpkin around the X on the ramp, walk your ass down to the stage, and that'd be fine. But whatever. Like,
look, change the ring posts, make them look like they Slim Jim, but not really God. Slim Jim because you know you ain't got that sponsorship. Oh, but Halloween Havoc. Speaking of that, Halloween Havoc, we might as well just go ahead and recommend Ray versus Eddie, Halloween Havoc 1997. Go ahead, check that out if you've never seen it. One of the rawest matches you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah. I think it's my favorite WCW match of all time. I think it is.
Yeah. I don't know what. Oh, also kind of news related to myself. So I don't know if you guys have seen Swerve's social media, but his podcast is going to the WWE Network. The theme song for that is a song I produced. So we'll be getting he's going to have a bunch of the music that we've been working on there, I believe, on the show somehow, and it's going to be like a video podcast on the network. So you'll be hearing, you know, some of the stuff I produce on the WWE Network shortly. So I don't know all the details that are going on with it. I'm actually going to meet up with Swerve tonight. We'll probably talk about it there, but look out.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. Y'all been grinding for how long now? How it's been going for a while now.
Yeah, for a while, because it started in, like, the middle of the pandemic. I'd probably say, like, May or June I started, okay. like, linking up with them. So, yeah. going to be... And I'll be having a song, like, a solo song on their album. So, it's going to be, you know, kind of... He didn't have to do that. I was content just producing and, you know, having a feature, which y'all will hear soon, that I smashed, murdered. So I have a single on there, so who knows if it gets played on there, y'all be able to hear it there, so check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So that's in the show. Be sure to rate us on whatever app you use and listen to this. Tell the folks about the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Be sure to visit prowrestlingtees.com/SocialSuplex and pick up some official Social Suplex Podcast Network merchandise. Be sure to check out the other shows on the network. On Sundays, we have One Nation Radio. On Tuesdays, we have Keeping the Strong Style. On Wednesdays, we have the Ricky and Clyde Wrestling Podcast. And on every other Wednesday, we have Gorman Watches Shit. On Thursdays, we have the Great Consequences Podcast. And on Fridays, we have 8-Bit Suplex. And on Saturdays, we have All Things Elite. My bad, Floyd. I almost said we ain't got no All Things Elite. I almost did that. I was trying to wrap it up. But thanks for listening, y'all. I think we'll be back on Thursday. I think we'll be back on Thursday to preview that pay-per-view. We got
to figure
out who we're going to bring in to, you know, to straighten us out, you know.
To usher us through the main roster.
Hand-holding.
I got a couple ideas, so we'll see if those folks are available.
Yeah, okay. Again, thanks for listening, y'all. Later.
Yep. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.